Overhead, many of the blocky buildings bridged the streets, making them dark tunnels, and where there were none of the bridging buildings overhead, wash hung on lines between opposing windows. Some streets were cobblestone, but most were mud, running with fetid water. People in drab, loose-fitting clothes filled the narrow streets, walked barefoot through the mud, stood with their arms folded, watching, or sat in groups in doorways. Women carrying clay water jugs on their heads, balanced with the aid of a single hand, moved tight against the walls to make room for the three horses. They made their way to and from the well in indifferent silence as Richard and Sister Verna passed. A few older men sat in wide doorways or leaned against walls. The men wore brimless, straight-sided, round, dark, flat-topped hats, with strange markings in light colors that looked to have been painted on with fingers. Many of the men smoked thin-stemmed pipes. Conversation fell silent as Richard and Sister Verna passed, and all watched the two strangers and three horses moving by. Some idly tugged on the long, dangling earrings they wore in their left ears. Sister Verna led the way through the narrow streets, taking them deeper into the maze of drab buildings. When they at last reached a wider cobblestone street, she halted, turned to him, and spoke in quiet warning.
"These people are the Magendai. Their land is a vast, crescent-shaped swath of forests. We must travel the length of their land, all the way to the point of the horn of their land. They worship spirits. Those skulls we saw back there were sacrifices to their spirits. Though they hold foolish beliefs which are reprehensible, we do not have the power to change them. We need to pass through their land. You will do as they ask, or our skulls will end up with all the others on that pile."
Richard refused to give her the satisfaction of an answer or an argument. He sat with his hands folded over the pommel of his saddle and without emotion watched her until she finally turned away and started out once more. After passing under a low bridge building, they entered a slightly dished, open square. Perhaps 1,000 men milled about or clustered in small groups. Like the other men he had seen, these all wore the one long, dangling earring, though on the right side instead of the left. They also all wore short swords and black sashes. Unlike the other men, none of these wore hats on their shaved heads. Off in the center, a raised platform held a circle of men sitting cross-legged, facing inward around a thick pole. Here was the source of the eerie melody. A circle of women in black sat in a ring, facing outward around the men. Standing with her back against the pole, a big woman in a billowing black outfit slid the back of her hand up the pole and took hold of a knot in the end of a rope hanging from a bell. As she watched Richard and the sister ride into the square, she rang the bell once. The sister brought them to an abrupt halt as the piercing peal drifted across the square, hushing the men and urging the flute players into faster strains.
"That is a warning," Sister Verna said, "a warning to the spirits of their enemies. The bell is also a call to the warriors present. Those are these men here in the square. The spirits have been warned, and the warriors called. If she rings that bell again, we die."
Sister Verna glanced to his even expression.
"This is a sacrifice ritual to appease spirits."
She watched men come and take hold of the reins of their horses. The circle of women in black stood and began to dance and twirl to the haunting music. When Sister Verna glanced at him again, Richard, with deliberate care, checked that his sword was loose in its scabbard. She sighed and then dismounted. When she cleared her throat in annoyance, he finally dismounted too. Sister Verna drew her light cloak tight around herself as she spoke to him while watching the women in black dance and spin around the pole and the woman in the center.
"The Magendai live in a crescent around a land of swampy forest in which live their enemy. The people who live in the heart of that forbidding land are a wild, savage lot and will not allow any of us through their land, much less guide us. Even if we could avoid them, we would become lost within an hour and never find our way out. The only way for us to reach the Palace of the Prophets, which lies beyond these savages, is to go around them, along the crescent of land belonging to the Magendai. Our destination lies between the cusps of the crescent belonging to the Magendai and beyond the savages in the center."
She glanced over to make sure he was at least listening before she went on.
"The Magendai are at constant war with the savages who live in that swampy forest. In order to be permitted through Magendai land, we must prove we are allied with them and their spirits, and not their enemy. Those skulls we saw are the skulls of this enemy, who were sacrificed to the Magendai spirits. In order for us to be permitted to pass, we must help them in this sacrifice. The Majendai believe that men with the gift, like all men, carry the seed of life and soul, endowed by the spirits. More, they believe that one with the gift has a special, direct link with the spirits. A sacrifice made with the aid of a young man with the gift confers the sanctifying grace of their spirits upon all their people. They believe it breathes life, divine life, on their people. The Majendai require this participation when we bring young boys through for the first time, believing it links their spirits to those of the Majendai. This ceremony also ensures that the people with whom they are at war will hate wizards because they help the Majendai and will never cooperate with them. This, the Majendai believe, denies their enemy a divine channel to the spirit world. The men in the square all drew their short swords. Laying the swords on the ground with their points toward the woman in the center, they knelt with shiny heads bowed. The woman who rang the bell, the one in the center, is the leader of these people, the Queen Mother. She is the one who is bound to the female spirits. She represents the spirits of fertility in this world. She is the embodiment of the receptacle of the divine seed from the spirit world. The dancing women in black formed into a line and started off the platform in the direction of Richard and the sister. The Queen Mother is sending her representatives to take you to the sacrificial offering. Sister Verna glanced up at him, then fussed with the corner of her cloak. We are fortunate. This means they have one to be sacrificed. If we came here and they didn't, we would have to wait until one of their enemy was captured. Sometimes that can take weeks, even months. Richard said nothing. She turned her back to the approaching women in black and faced him. You will be taken to a place where the prisoner is held. There you will be offered the chance to give your blessing. Not giving your blessing means you wish to precede the prisoner in sacrifice. If you don't give your blessing, it will only ensure that you die too. You give your blessing by kissing the sacred knife they will offer you. You don't have to kill the person with your own hand. You have only to kiss the knife to give your blessing, to give the spirits blessings, and they will do the killing. But you must watch them do it, so the spirits will see the sacrifice through your eyes. She glanced over her shoulder at the approaching women in black. The beliefs of these people are obscene. She sighed in resignation and turned to face him again. Richard folded his arms and glared at her. I know you don't like this, Richard, but it has kept peace for 3,000 years between us and the Majendai. Though it sounds a paradox, it saves lives, more lives than it costs. The savages who are their enemy make war not only on them, but also on us. The palace and the civilized people of the old world are sporadically subjected to their raids and fierce attacks. Small wonder, Richard thought, but he said nothing. Sister Verna stepped aside to stand at his shoulder as the women in black formed into a dark knot before the two of them. All were older, perhaps the age of grandmothers. They were all portly, and their black outfits covered their hair and everything else except their wrinkled hands and faces. With gnarled fingers, one drew the coarse black fabric tight at her chin. She bowed her head to Sister Verna.
Welcome, wise woman. Our sentries have told us of your approach for nearly a day now. We are pleased to have you among us, for it is the time of the planting sacrifice. Though we had not expected your presence, it will be a great homage to the spirits to have the blessing in the sacrifice.
The old woman, who only came up to the height of his breastbone, looked Richard up and down. Then she spoke again to Sister Verna.
This is a magic man. He is not a boy.
We have never before brought one so old to the palace of the wise women, Sister Verna said. But he is a magic man, the same as the others.
The old woman in black looked into Richard's eyes as he watched her without expression.
He is too old to give the blessing.
Sister Verna tensed.
He is still a magic man.
The woman nodded to the sister.
But he is too old to have others perform the sacrifice for him. He must do it himself. He must give our sacrifice to the spirits by his own hand.
She gestured for a woman behind to come forward.
Lead him to where the offering waits.
With a bob of her head, the woman came forward and indicated he was to follow. Sister Verna tugged on his shirt sleeve. Richard could feel the heat of magic radiating from her fingers, up his arms, terminating in an uncomfortable tingling sensation at his neck, under the Rada Han.
Richard, she whispered, don't you dare swing the axe this time. You know not what you will bring to ruin.
Richard met her eyes before turning away without a word.
The round old woman led him off down a muddy street, past old men sitting in doorways, watching, and then turned them down a narrow alley. At the end, she stooped through a low doorway. Richard had to bend nearly in half to follow. Inside, carpets of intricate designs but dull colors covered the floor. There was no furniture except several low, leather-covered chests holding oil lamps. Four men with shaved heads squatted, rather than sat, on the rugs, two to each side of a passageway hung with a heavy tapestry instead of a door. Short spears with sharp, leaf-shaped iron heads rested across their knees. The unexpectedly high ceiling held a cloud of pipe smoke. The men stood and bowed to the old woman. She bobbed her head to them and, as she did so, drew Richard forward.
"This is the magic man. Since he is the age of a man, the Queen Mother directs that the spirits take the sacrifice through his hands."
They all nodded and gave grim agreement that it was a wise decision, and prayed she would tell the Queen Mother that it would be done as directed. The woman in black bid them fair fortune in the task. She closed the rough spruce door behind herself after stooping through the low opening. When she was gone, the men broke into grins. They all slapped Richard on the back as if taking him into their confidence. The back of one man's shaved neck wrinkled in rows of furrows as he turned to glance at the tapestry-covered passageway. He put an arm around Richard's shoulder, giving it a squeeze with powerful fingers.
"You are fortunate indeed, lad. You'll like what we have for you."
His sly smile revealed a missing bottom tooth.
"Come with us. You'll like this, lad. We can promise you, you will."
He gave a hearty chuckle.
"Today you'll be a man, if you're not one yet."
The other three laughed with him.